Okay.
Abani Ghani, everyone. This is Professor Amon-Ra, Professor Emeritus, California State University of Long Beach, former Compton City Councilman, former Compton College Board of Trustees, former Compton Unified School District Board of Trustees, and a longtime community activist, along with Brother Joe Hembrick, historian, activist, and exceptional coach and PE teacher for the Linwood Unified School District, administrator for the Compton Unified School District, and longtime friend of our guests. They went to school together. I wanted to introduce to you a very important person that's going to be a part of our podcast tonight. He's first time I met him, was in Long Beach, and he started talking about his business then. He was into business then. We was fresh, and you know, I'm not a business person, but he's definitely one. Entrepreneurship. And then I started following him on Facebook, and I saw that he did some extensive traveling and development. And so we just want to appreciate him coming on and say thank you, Asante Sana. The grains of sand on the ocean floor are few compared to the many. Thanks we give you for coming and being on this podcast to share your wealth of knowledge about Black people being in business and what's going on the continent and wherever else you want to take us. And so without further ado, I want to introduce Brother John Musgrove, but he'll tell you more about himself and about his perspective of Black people in entrepreneurship, business, and the challenges we face as a people. Asante Sana. Brother John Musgrove, take over.
Oh, I appreciate the invitation, Brother Ra and Brother Joe. Business has just been in my nature ever since I was a kid. I've always wanted to do business. That was my main focus. So as I grew, understanding that business is what employed people, and we needed more people in our community to be employed, be more self-sufficient. So in the early 80s, I decided to change careers and become a stockbroker. And in the mid-80s, and I don't even know if you remember this, Ross, that back when I was living in Paramount, and I ran for city council of Paramount.
Yeah.
You introduced me to Merv Dimely, who was heading up the Democratic Party in Southern California at that time and helped launch my run.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. But one of the things that I really want to emphasize about entrepreneur in Africa is that Africa is the future. There was an article that I read back in 1989 and 1990 in Barron's. Barron's is a financial news. And I would read these financial news from time to time when I got in the office in the morning. And one of the articles in Barron's spoke about Africa. And this brother made the statement in this article that he was writing that Africa is the last venture for capital expansion. And so I looked at that, and I had thought about Africa all the time in a cultural sense. I never thought about Africa in an economic sense. And so I started to research and more about the economics of Africa and to see how we could connect as Black people in America with Black people in Africa to do business and to raise our standard of living here in America and also in Africa. In 1998, I took my first trip to Africa. I went to South Africa. And having been a stockbroker for about 10, 12 years at the time, I'm thinking that I know everything that there is to know about making money and doing business and bringing people together, and I'm going over here to fix Africa. And when I got over there, I was staying in a place right outside Johannesburg. And from the place I was staying in, I could see the city of Johannesburg. It was about 15 miles away. But in between Johannesburg and where I was staying was these large shanty townsheds where the Black people lived. And it was so massive that it blew my mind. I said, this thing is bigger than anybody could ever comprehend if they haven't been here. The conditions that I saw in South Africa, this is just right after apartheid. The conditions in South Africa were so appalling, it just blew my mind. And so I was thinking about what can we do as a people that we could help develop the resources in Africa and help us develop here in America. This is not a new theme. This has been a theme that's been out for a pretty good while. Marcus Garvey and his Pan-African movement was part of that same ideology that Africans in America and Africans on the continent have to come together in order to better ourselves. And so I came back to America and started to focus on how do we make that connection? And it's tough when there is no infrastructure in place to do that and to really study the problem as to why every place in the world has developed except for Africa. Is it just Africa is in a bad situation, a bad luck, a bad people? What is it about Africa to where it doesn't develop? We look at countries that were at war with America, Japan, Korea, Germany, all those countries were at war with America and brutally destroyed, but yet they rose to become economic giants. Why is Africa still laboring, trying to get itself together? And what I found is that our condition in America is no different than the condition of our brothers and sisters on the continent. When we look to do business here in America, we're strapped because we're not able to get enough capital. The African countries have the same problem, trying to raise capital. The IMF and the World Bank, they hold the key to economic development. So the African countries are struggling the same way we are struggling here in the United States, trying to figure out how do we get a leg up. We've been through all the civil rights programs, we've been through the educational programs, and yet our condition economically is no more better than it was when we first came out of slavery. We still own 1.5% of the nation's GDP. That's what it was right after slavery. So why are we still struggling? Why is Africa still struggling? And the thing that I thought that would be most important for us to first recognize is that we don't have a problem. The problem is not with us. The problem is with the people who control us. And that problem is institutional racism or institutional white supremacy. And it falls on us to be able to see ourselves in a different light and not to be put in the narrative as we always looking at our condition and seeing the shortcomings of our conditions. We always look at those things that we say are holding us back, education, finance, those things are important, but we have to learn first to come together as a people. And our company, Connect.biz, what we do, we make the connection between entrepreneurs and business contracts. What we do, we look at what is the best fit in order to move businesses forward without having all the pieces in their hand, instead of having all the parts that they need, they have to learn how to collaborate and build partnership and do things together instead of trying to run the race by ourselves. And so what we do at Connect, we find the best fit in the company, in your companies, to fit with other businesses, to promote your businesses and show you how to deliver a quality product that will help sustain your business. These are the same things that we are trying to do in Africa as well. The manufacturing sector in Africa is starting to grow in Kenya, in Rwanda, Nigeria, Ghana. Those countries are starting to develop an economic manufacturing base. And that economic manufacturing base is what is needed in order to create jobs and to be able to develop a tax base to where you can build your infrastructure to build schools and educational facilities. So my main focus has been connecting with brothers in the Congo. I have connections with the brothers in the Congo, in Nigeria, and in Ghana. And one of the things that we're looking at in the Congo is housing. Housing is one of the major problems throughout Africa. In every African country that I've been to, there was a huge shortage of housing. And so I've been working with the governments over there, especially in the Congo, on how to develop housing, how to develop sustainable housing with sustainable energy. We have Black companies here in the United States that could help facilitate those things, that could help facilitate the manufacturing, can help facilitate the construction. We just got to make the connection. That is one of the things that we work day and night on, trying to find the right connections. When we went to Ghana in our third meeting, one of the things that I did while I was in Ghana was to purchase stock in the Ghana cocoa facility. Ghana has the best cocoa on the planet, but they haven't been able to monetize it because they have to sell, they were selling the raw beans, and the raw beans aren't the profit. The confections are the profit. So if you refine the beans and then sell the cocoa, the cocoa butter, the milk chocolate, then your profits are higher. So those are some of the things that we've seen going into Africa. Nigeria, they have some beautiful cities over there that we need to start supporting those cities too, as far as vacations. On our journeys throughout the world, the last place we think about going is Africa. I know when I'm in Africa, I see everybody in Africa except African Americans. We are the least of the people there. There are people from China, from Japan, from Iran, from Iraq, everywhere. African Americans, we need to start going back to Africa and understand that our connection and our survival is with our mother country, Africa. And when we get that connection, we will be on our way to doing something very important.
Okay. You still there, John?
Yeah, I'm still here.
Okay.
So, and in this, I'm not sure what questions that you would want to have answered or addressed in this.
Okay.
Looking at my personal ventures over there, what I've done and what I've encountered, right. I think there's great opportunity in Africa for African Americans, and we have to take that first step.
All right. Well, we'll go around the horn and see my brother Mashinda. Are you there?
Yeah, how you doing?
Yeah, all right, brother. This is Brother John Musgrove, businessman and entrepreneur, and been working with the continent. I know you heard some of it, but do you have any questions?
No, I'm just enjoying the presentation. It's not only raised great points, but I mean, I appreciate him sharing the experience. And I think, this is something very interesting to look into.
All right. Who is that? Talib? Talib.
Talib is not able to speak. So he's just here listening, he said.
Okay. What about you, Rashidi?
Well, I would like to talk to Brother John offline. You know, when we can set it up. I want to talk to him about a few things.
Okay.
Yeah, let me put this in, Rod. And this is the purpose of this, to start the conversation. Because the conversation need to be started on how do we make those connections on the continent.
Caller.
Go ahead. That was my phone.
Okay. Yeah. How do we make those connections on the continent? I mean, it is very well known that Africa has all the natural resources that you could ever want. You know, the gold, the diamonds, all those trace minerals that are needed in that make your computers and your cell phones possible, that make automobile possible. All those trace minerals are in Africa in an abundance. So they know that the minerals are there, but they will not give Africa money against those minerals unless they do X, Y, and Z through the World Bank and the IMF. But I think those things are going to change. I see some new things on the horizon that I'm very excited about as far as doing business. One of the things is that I don't know if any of you guys looked at blockchain or digital currencies, Bitcoin, Ethereum. Those applications are going to be monumental, and because you decentralize the banks on those, and so when we start talking about the new financing and the new economics of business going forward, it's going to be totally different than what it is now. And that's one of the things that we talked to with our clients about. You have to develop new business plans. Those old business plans are not going to work in the next 4 or 5 years. They will be obsolete.
Okay. Well, Brother Hembrick, do you have any questions?
I don't have any questions, but well, maybe so. You know, I've been familiar about the resources that are there, and due to colonialism and all that they've gone through, and changing their culture and their God and all of that, is one of the hindrances of us coming together to get this going. We need to be of a Idi Amin spirit, nationalizing the things that these outsiders have taken control of. And they need these resources too. Mm-hmm. So if it was put a stop on it by some of these governments that are European in nature, you know, even the governmental systems over there, I don't think there's not one country that's operating on an African model. They're still using stuff that the conqueror left and whatnot. But anyway, I've studied all of that, especially in the Congo. You know, with the rubber that they have going on there, and I don't know if you checked out a King Leopold soliloquy, the book that Mark Twain wrote. So you know, the Belgians are bloodthirsty, like Malcolm said, bloody jaw wolf, and you know, all of them that have been there. So if Africans did want to seize control of their own natural resources from the people at the front door and the back door, the Boers and British at the back door and them Arabs at the front door, I don't know if we could pull it off, you know, because we can't defend ourselves, you know what I mean? And so I'm of the belief that we don't need nobody but us.
And Joe, you are exactly right. We don't need nobody but ourselves. There was an article that I read a couple of weeks ago this brother, he used to be the CEO of Swiss, the European banking system. And he made the comment in his article that the greatest resource that Africa has is its people. You know, one of the extraordinary things that intrigued me about the brothers and sisters on the continent, no matter where I went, all of them spoke 3 or 4 different languages. That just blew me away. We struggle here to try and pick up a second language. These brothers was converted because they have people coming from all over the world and they need to converse with them. They're not going to try and speak the African language. They're going to make the Africans speak their language in order to do business with them.
Yeah, you know, it just behooves me, you know, like even the apprentice people that we have here, you know, as far as industrial arts go and whatnot. You know, I don't know about how many brothers are left from the old school that had these trades, but mm-hmm. these trades can be monumental importance in Africa. Just auto mechanics. You know, I haven't been over there, but the people I know that have been there, there's buses and cars all on the side of the road. And the mechanic can go there and become rich just by learning how to.
Yeah. But you know, the thing that we see in Africa is everybody else sees the opportunity to get rich in Africa, except for African Americans. That hurt me more than anything else going to Africa. You see these Arabs and Indians and Chinese talking crazy to the African people over there. You know, and what I come to understand is that institutional white supremacy rules the planet. You just don't rule America or Africa, because we were the institutional white supremacy put us in slavery and colonized everywhere else in the world. You know, so we're still dealing with institutional white supremacy. And the narrative around that is that white people are superior and Black people are inferior. Even when you talk to the other nationalities that are in Africa, they recognize that they ain't on the same level with the white man, but he damn sure ain't down there with you. And he lets you know that shit. I got into so many confrontations going into stores and restaurants. Because just like our ghettos, all the stores, all the restaurants, all the retail business is owned by foreigners. They're not owned by Black people, Africans. And they have the same issues that we have dealing with the Koreans in the liquor stores and in their little markets. I see those same issues. So it's the same system, the same doctrine being implemented no matter where you go.
Yo, you have any more comments?
I see. I knew about the, you know, about us killing each other around the world, how they got that rolling too. That's the first I heard of the neighborhood markets and businesses being owned by foreigners also. Every time I go in a place and buy some food or the beauty supply, you know, how come we can't? You know, we're the ones in there buying all the stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we need, you know, there's different aspects of our history that have taught us what to do. We just need to do it. And we need
to. And Joe, there's a lot of planning that needs to be done as we move forward. We look at the situation in the United States today. I mean, we're getting ready to go back into Jim Crow. You know, we think we had made some progress in America, but we might end up back in slavery. You know, these people here are serious about trying to do away with people's rights. But when we look at our situation here in the United States and look at the Black people's situation in Africa, they're similar. And one of the things that you mentioned, Joe, was the religion. I went to Ghana, and they had churches in Ghana with 5,000 people in them singing and jumping just like the big churches here in the United States. You know, they don't practice their religion. They're practicing the religion that was given to them. And so you can't have a sense of self if you're doing something that was given to you, you adopted from somewhere else. You know, the narrative around who we are as a people has to change. We gotta grab the narrative to where every time there's a narrative out there about Black people, it can't be about killing and about thievery and about dying and about poverty and disease and sickness. Those are the narratives that are always formulated around Black people. We have to start developing our own narrative and start speaking to that in order for us to be able to make some progress.
I agree with what you're saying wholeheartedly. The American institution, which you just said is probably, is what you're saying is worldwide. And mm-hmm. and I understand that by listening to Neely Fuller. Mm-hmm. He talks about a global situation here, it's global things that are happening, and you just confirmed that for me.
Yeah.
And so the reason why we started this platform is to start getting ideas out there. Like I give you an example. We buy into all of the institutions that America has to offer us. Like yesterday you had Mother's Day. And a lot of us participate in that dynamic. Mm-hmm. And it's Mother's Day every day. Mm-hmm. There should be a practice of honoring our mothers on a daily basis by just doing what we need to do for them and offering help and doing the things that we should do. We shouldn't be spending our time, spending our money when they say this is this and this is that. It's as long as we're buying into it, that's how we get trapped. And this is exactly why we started what we're doing here. Mm-hmm. So the brother Tlaib, he had a question that I need to give to you. He said, you mentioned Bitcoin, and I was wondering if the NFTs would play a part.
The NFTs and Bitcoin are two different things. What you got to look at is where Bitcoin come from. Bitcoin comes from blockchain. Once you understand blockchain, and there's a paper out, the white paper on blockchain, and then you'll understand how they were able to create Bitcoin through blockchain. Now, that being said, there's a lot of differences in the cryptocurrencies out there. I have money out there in the crypto arena. I've been taking a bath the last couple of days, but I didn't buy it for an investment. I bought it for its utility. When you learn how those tokens work, and those tokens give you access to different arenas and different platforms, and also with Ethereum, you're able to do peer-to-peer. You can borrow directly from the bank without having to go to the bank. you can buy stock directly from the stock exchange without having a broker or a third party buy the stock for you. You can buy houses without a real estate agent and mortgages without mortgage agents. So that peer-to-peer eliminate the third party. So Wall Street's been fighting this thing for the last 8 to 9 years and they can't destroy it. So they tried to join it. But I believe, and this is somebody who's been in the financial arena for over 35 years, I do believe that the digital currency and the blockchain is the future of finance and also business. And that's what's going to really level the playing field for Africa, because they do not have to go through the IMF or the World Bank in order to access resources.
All right.
That NTF thing you mentioned, what is that an acronym for?
Oh, that was Talib accident for that. Those are non-fungible. I can't remember the name of it. Non-fungible transfer. That's right, non-fungible transfer.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. But those are pretty tricky because the valuation of those things are what the buyer will buy, or what the market will supply. So it's kind of like the stock market in a sense, and that's why I say I favor as far as the digital currency go, I like Ethereum, because those platforms that I want to get on, I need those tokens to be able to get on those platforms. So I like the utility of those of Ethereum. It's a brother named Reggie Middleton, and he has his own coin. It's called Veritasium. And through his coin, you can buy gold, you can buy platinum, and you can have it delivered directly to your house without a third party. You can borrow money without going to a bank, just borrow directly from person out there wanting to loan it to you. And in that blockchain, it secures that loan. That's a whole different story on how blockchain work. But I think with the resources that Africa have in the ground, blockchain is gonna favor Africa a whole lot.
I could kind of see that, because if it's something that the world bank system is can't control,
mm-hmm.
I could see that happening. So that definitely got to do something different than what we're doing. Yeah, I could see that happening.
And that's what they're fighting. They don't want you to be able to decentralize the banks. The reason the United States can put pressure on Putin is because the world trades in dollars. And so whatever you're going to buy in the world, you're going to need U.S. dollars to buy it. If you can put a currency out there that you can trade without dollars, it's going to make a lot of sense for a lot of people.
Appreciate what's been said, if I understand correctly. I just have a couple of questions there. When you say Africa's the future, what do you base that on, and how do you come to that conclusion?
Well, I base this on the article that I tell you I read when I was at when I was a stockbroker and read in Barron's, and the article stated that the 21st century belongs to Africa economically. And he based that on the resources that were in Africa and the development of Africa coming forward. We hear a lot of negative stuff about Africa because that's what they want us to hear. You know, before I went to Africa, the only thing I saw about Africa is those commercials where they were trying to raise money and they had little kids with flies flying around them. They're hungry and malnutrition. So obviously, I never wanted to go to Africa. Mm. You know, and that's the narrative that's been perpetuated for us. So when I read this article in Barron's, and I'm sure this white boy didn't have no reason to lie about what the future held for economics, he was just being realistic. Now, how do we take advantage of that is the most important thing. We know that the resources of the future are in Africa, and Africa would be a dominant economy. Africa is the only place in the world that has enough arable land to be able to grow enough food to feed the whole world.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Okay, now, the other question is, one of the issues that a lot of people who've been to Africa and a lot of historians point out is that each country act independently in many ways, mm-hmm. and they have different currency, mm-hmm. and that sometimes you go to another country, you have to change, and then you go to another country, you have to change currencies. You know, and Diop talked about continental unity and trying to develop a national monetary system, a national language, mm-hmm. and a national military. How do you see that as possibility with the institutional racism and colonialism? Is it possible to develop a unity among all the nations with all the ethnic conflicts that they have, and among that, even if it's manufactured by whites to fight each other and giving each other guns, but won't give, you know, business opportunities. So how do you see that in your travels?
Well, just like here in the United States, you know, just like we're having this dialogue right here between us, it's brothers on the continent that are doing the same thing. You know, these are the small movements that are taking place to bring us to the place where we're gonna go. For instance, in Cameroon, there is a city that they consider to, in the next 10 years, that will rival Silicon Valley when it comes to technology. The internet has been able to supply Africa with information that it was never able to get before. One thing about the internet is YouTube. Anything that you want to learn or learn how to do is on YouTube. So when you go to Cameroon, you'll see some of the most sophisticated technology that you can imagine. It's not on the scale yet of Silicon Valley, but those brothers is coming along. The next 10 to 15 years, they will be formidable. So it's just little steps that we take. And we face a great enemy. If we underestimate who this enemy is, we will make a grave mistake, because they're not going to give this power up easy. This is what they have been living on, the blood of indigenous people and indigenous countries for hundreds of years. So they're not going to give that up. That whole thing that's happening in Ukraine right now, this whole thing about stabilizing the West power, That's what that whole fight is for.
Mm-hmm.
And so the West is starting to crumble. It's starting to decay. As the old folks would say, the West, your slip is showing. You know, so it's just a matter of time. And one of the things that I remember my college days and dealing with a lot of the so-called revolutionary brothers, and we had these rap conversations. We talk about Marxism and socialism and all these different concepts. And one of the things that stuck with me was Hegel dialectical materialism. which he talks about the negation of the negation. One system negates the other system and brings it forward because that old system doesn't work anymore. And now we see where this Western system doesn't work anymore. That's why Elon Musk took over the automobile industry in 10 years. He is the largest automobile manufacturer in dollars in the world. He's bigger than Toyota, GM, Ford, and Chrysler combined capitalization. Mm-hmm. And so the old guard is dying away. The new is coming. Our offsprings and our great offsprings are going to live a life that we can only imagine. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there are two tendencies of history. That's going out and that's that's coming in. The other question that I have, and then I'll get back to that problem with the monetary exchange, is what about the role of corruption? Because many people say that the leadership, racism comes in different forms. Mm-hmm. There's the violent, there's the political, and there's the economical by buying off leaders that exploit the masses and just keep the money for themselves. You got some of the richest leaders in Africa, mm-hmm. but people are not benefiting from it. Mm-hmm. And a lot of it is some corruption. Did you see any of that? And what's your position on that?
Yeah, I saw the corruption firsthand. I talked to the governor of Kinshasa, you know, they look into to pad their own pockets, you know, and they are sponsored by European countries. You know, if you're gonna run a campaign, you need money to run a campaign. And the more money you get, the more visibility you're gonna get, the more votes you're gonna get. And so, yeah, the corruption is there, but there's still that revolutionary spirit amongst the people in the country who are being deprived. You know, it's not like the brothers and sisters are sitting there and he's doing this and they're saying, okay. It's just like when we were sitting here and Trump was doing all that crazy stuff, wasn't nothing we could do about it but plan to see how we can get him out of office. You know, so when those brothers and sisters over there, they're doing the same thing. They see what's happening. They understand what's happening. But the oppression that is there and the thievery that goes on, not just with the politicians, the airfields that are in the Congo that land planes land and take out millions of dollars in material every night. You know, so it ain't just the local people that are corrupt. It's institutional white supremacy. Well, we understand that. I don't know who I remember a term back in the 60s, the song said the world is a ghetto. Mm-hmm. This is an apartheid world, and white folks run it. Mm-hmm. And we are just here to do service for them.
Mm-hmm.
And so the thing that will happen when we transform, you know, like Brother Joe was talking about the knowledge that we need, that knowledge is so important of self and past. You know, that helps shape the narrative that we begin to tell. If we know once we were great, we know we can be great again. You know, so it's about reshaping the narrative. We're not always the victim. We get more coverage on TV from getting killed by the police than starting a business and making millions of dollars. We won't get no publicity for that. But if we get killed by the police, oh, we all on the news.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so the narrative has to change.
Mm-hmm.
And we're the ones who have to take over the narrative, because now we have the platform to do that. We can do that on social media. We can change the narrative. This is what's happening right now. We're changing the narrative.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of talking about what we can't do and what we don't have, let's talk about what we can do and what we do have. The astonishing thing about America is that 48 million Black people live in this country. 48 million. If we were in Europe, we would be the fifth largest country. If we were in Africa, we would be the seventh largest country at 48 million people. We don't understand the dynamic of that 48 million and how powerful that 48 million is.
Mm.
But marketers know how powerful that 48 million is because they market to our community and they understand the demographics better than we understand the demographics.
Okay. But, you know, when you look at the struggle on the continent, and not just that, entrepreneurship and developing the relationship that the Honorable Elijah, Mark Garvey tried,
mm-hmm.
the efforts of Gaddafi to unify the Organization of African Unity, and he was assassinated. And the major assassinations on the continent, going back to Patrice Lumumba in the Congo, and as well as Stephen Biko. Carl
Thomas and Burkina Faso.
Yeah, all of that with the European hand involved in it. Seems as if when governments want to go and try to do their own thing, they either get assassinated or a coup come. Mm. And how do you deal with that when you're trying to do business and then all of a sudden a coup come in and you're no longer in the nepotism. Mm-hmm. But look at Mugabe, who mm-hmm. was Zimbabwe. He was there a long time. After they won their independence, he became president. But then it seems as if he changed. You know, he wouldn't give up the power. Then he got hooked up with this young girl. And, you know, and then the people just, you know, I mean, it deflates you. It deflates you. Even Nelson Mandela and Bishop Bhutu, reconciliation and all of that. Seemed as if, you know, the people were up and they thought there was going to be some major changes.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and Nelson Mandela had the stature to develop international trade mm-hmm. and business among African Americans here that was rich
mm-hmm.
and things of that nature. But, you know, how do we look at that? You know, even in Ghana. Ghana offered land to people to move back, I'm not mistaken.
They still offer it.
Okay, then go ahead. Let's talk about that.
Well, the corruption in Africa is everywhere. You know, everybody is hustling and everybody's trying to get over. But behind all of that is people who benefit from that, benefactors who support that. And these white benefactors are always going to make sure that they people stay in power.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there is a revolutionary struggle going on there. Brothers are fighting that every day. You know, just like we over here, we in the struggle for our rights here in this country. Those brothers and sisters over there are doing the same thing. But when you talk about how do we overcome all this oppression? It's what I was saying earlier about the dialectic that we are in. This dialectic materialism will negate this system that is in place now. We have never seen a system that has maintained itself over history. No system. So just like that system, the Roman system failed, the Greek system, the Egyptian system, this system also will fail. Now, once it falls, how do we benefit from that destruction? Or how do we incorporate ourselves into that to where we make sure that we are on the rise while the Western part, Western civilization is declining? Our two great, like the brother I was saying earlier today, the brother was saying that the greatest resources in Africa are the African people. The African people will decide what is best for Africa, and they will do what is best for Africa. And the majority of the people, Ra, are just like us. You know, you have a lot of corruption over there, but the majority of the people will want to go to work, come home, take care of their family, do the things that they need to do. They see the hypocrisy in the system. They see the corruption in the system, and they just go by doing what they need to do until they can change it. But it is a struggle.
I can imagine. Okay. All right, Brother Roski, you have any more comments?
Well, I'm just, you know, as he's talking and as everyone is talking about this situation, I just see what we're doing, and we have to continue to take ourselves out of the mentality of this system, mm-hmm. and come anew. And I've been doing it. And so hopefully, you know, people around us, and we just got to change, man. We can't buy into what this system offers us. We have to do something totally different, new mindset, or an ancient mindset that Hembrick talks about. You know, we have to, I'm totally against this system when it comes to the mentality and the brutality and all of that. I'm a person of peace, so I have to do something different.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, what about Mashinda? You have any comment, Mashinda?
Yes, brother. Great presentation. Understanding clearly, you know, I'm in agreement. You know, I've been doing a little research on, you know, the blockchain technology and the, you know, the whole, you know, Ethereum and platform and things like that. You know, and of course, I'm still in the lab learning, but
mm-hmm.
I truly believe, you know, you're dead on it, because with or without us, you know, this is going down. This is a, like you say, it's a whole shift of how the world does business. And you know, so it's imperative, you know, like, but you showed up tonight and made these great points, and hopefully whoever listens to it, you know, they would gain from it, you know, try to do their own research and try to move forward, you know, forward with you know, keeping up with what's going on, you know, in terms of, you know, because this is just like, say, we are all affected by this. If we don't understand this monetary system that's in play, you know, it can affect us directly, you know. So, but again, thank you, man, for showing up, and I'm gonna just continue my research, and I hope we meet again.
All right, thank you,
Brother Joe. Hey, Brother Hembrick, you have any more comments?
Yes, sir. First of all, you know, I think, you know, we're still suffering too much from the illusion of inclusion. Point I like to make. That's why we can't think of, you know, the stuff that our ancestors did or would be doing. I also think that we need to be about, you know, what Dr. John Henry Clark called self-reliance.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of big Bitcoin and all that other stuff out there in the business world. But, you know, we need to master being able to take care of ourselves on a daily basis. like growing food, you know, making our clothes, making our shoes, teaching the basics that we could be doing and training the youngsters to do, so they can earn a living, can sustain themselves. As far as the corruption goes, here and there, I was reading in the philosophy and opinions of Marcus Garvey and some stuff that they had in there that they were using, you know, for the NAIA. Mm-hmm. Like, that's a corrupt person. It may cost them their lives and their family members' lives. Mm-hmm. But when people know that that's what it's going to cost them if they get caught with the hand in the cookie jar, that would stop that hand from going in the cookie jar, follow what I'm saying. And so, and then as far as the nations in Africa, you know, Africans, you know, in the past, you know, operated as a federated state. I think, what's the brother who wrote a myth of civilization? The French from Senegal.
Diop.
Talk about the federated state. It'd be like six countries operate, you know, among mm-hmm. them. You know, one in, and all of them producing different products so they can exchange with each other on the barter system.
That's the key, Joe. That's it. Yeah.
You bring this white man face on money into the scheme, you're getting away from yourself.
Mm-hmm.
We talk too much out in the public. You know, we need a mile thing going on.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? We take oaths and anytime we see that, it got to be eradicated. And once people know that this was going to happen to you because of your corrupt behavior, maybe that will change the narrative, as you say, brother, from the people we need to do. But you know, while we're getting there, we got to eat. We got to have a roof over our head.
Mm-hmm.
We got to wear clothes. We got to raise our children, teach our kids, and that's enough to focus on. Right? You know, we don't even make a damn potato chip, but all them eating potato chips. You know what I'm saying? We having babies, and ain't nobody who can't even make a safety pin to hold a diaper up. But all the resources come from there.
Mm-hmm.
So. And I think the education system and the religious systems are the things that's holding us back the most. I used to have this lady just sold a house next door to me. She was from Ghana, big time Presbyterian. And I'm trying to share African stuff with her on religion. Oh, shit, Joe, you're crazy. Religion that enslaved you in the first damn place. And let me say this, when we talk about North Africa with the Arabs, they did it to us first.
Mm-hmm.
They don't get no land. They don't get a blade of grass on the 14 million square miles of the continent.
Mm-hmm.
They went back to that desert where they came from, Gaddafi included, all of them getting rich off African resources. And I remember when I brought this Roscon, you know, you said Black History Month at Centennial. I was sitting on a meeting one time, share this story right quick, and they had this what they call spotlight. It's real dark in the theater. Then the spotlight hit on a kid, and this kid would be Malcolm X. Another kid would be Martin Luther King, like that. And so they were trying to, you know, pick out the figures that wanted to be mentioned. So I said, Idi Amin. That whole room went off on me. He's a cannibal, I said, that's the media. And when we understand the game that's being played on, I'm an OX coach. So when you coaching, you know, you break out film. You look at what the opponent is doing. You look at where the opponent has come from. You look at what they did in the past. You analyze that and be ready to combat what he's doing.
Mm-hmm.
For example, the folks that's running things, that hidden hand that's come from the protocols of the elders of Zion, y'all know who I'm talking about. They control mass media, finance, transportation, law, medicine, all of those things, okay? They wrote wherever they go in the world, that's their thing. They plan to control those various institutions. So we just need a plan to come up with some things because we're all around the world. Every country on this planet, we're there. We are there represented. We were there before this European got there. Now, how can 89%, how can 11% control 89%?
That's apartheid.
What's happening? So once you see the numbers and you see the plan and what's being played on you, you need to sit down with a plan, just, you know, reconfigure your mind about what's going on. Instead of looking up in the sky, thinking that's where your relief is going to come from, when they stole that from you too, you know. But our people, I don't know, man. I just keep telling folks and try to wake them up and get them to see what's real, but it's a hard struggle. So all we can do is do it with our kids, and maybe their kids will keep it going and keep it going.
Mm-hmm.
You can see that this thing that's going on this planet right now, they're destroying, you know, the whole planet where people ain't gonna be able to live here no more. You know what I'm saying? Well, just like the Dogon, you know, they have the figure of Urugu, and that's who he is. Matter of fact, I suggest everybody get that book and read it. It talks about, you know, the psychology of the European and what his whole aim is,
mm-hmm.
which is to destroy nature and keep confusion going on throughout the universe. That's his aim. You know what I'm saying? If we don't wake up in California, we're going to have to find out where we can get a drink of water from.
Yeah, but there's still, there are people that, some black people with money do invest in Africa.
Mm-hmm.
They try to develop wells for water and develop schools and do things. And second, people like Patrice Lumumba, people like who's the brother in Ghana? They're revolutionaries that try. They try to in struggle. You even mentioned Idi Amin and others. You know, he kicked the white people out, whipped them, took their land. And then they got other Africans to attack him. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, they say he ate people, say he had siblings. And people buy into it. They make movies of it. And the same thing with Shaka Zulu and all that. We always, as long as we fighting, we are winning. Mm-hmm. As long as we continue to fight, the war is not over.
Yeah.
And you got black people that do invest in Africa
mm-hmm.
and try to. I remember Don Cornelius and this brother that used to be the manager with him, they tried to develop international business on the continent of Africa.
Mm-hmm.
It's just like what John was saying, the monetary system and the economic system. And when Garvey tried to go back and how the white folks destroyed his movement mm-hmm. To develop corporations and businesses, we had war. And I agree with you, Joe. It's a war, and you write about religion. Those that preach the gospel of prosperity, and those that and instead of communalism, Bishop Blake, Bishop Noel Jones, all of them could be investing heavily in Africa mm-hmm. and opening up businesses. But it takes the masses of people to make them do it.
Yeah.
It takes their parishioners to say, hey, look, we give you all this money and you can do something. Mm-hmm. But a lot of the missionaries think that they represent God to them and represent them to God for them rather than, how come God can't talk to you directly? Mm-hmm. You know, they say, why you need an intermediary for God? You know, and so these are the issues that we face with, but the struggle continues. What they did in after LA 92, which we're going to talk about next week, and they appoint Peter Huberall to rebuild the city. He gives the contracts to everybody else. Clinton and Bush in Haiti. They get the contract to nonprofit organizations that they started. And nobody bring it up. You understand? But John knows about it.
Yeah.
The people eating clay, and then they can get guns in there for them to fight each other. Mm-hmm. But they can't get money in there for them to start businesses and become independent. And that's why you're right, Joe. We have to come up with our own monetary system. And that's what Brother John was talking about. There's a possibility if we get some continuity with this new monetary system called crypto money or whatever. But the point is that you need that leadership now. There's a lot of black athletes saying, pay me in crypto money. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of actors saying, pay me in black actors. Mm-hmm. And maybe they will start funding some of these projects. And you're right again, Joe. We need a military. You got to have a military. Not because you want one. You just need one.
You got to be able to defend yourself.
Yeah, well, against aggressors.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that the white man didn't fight his way into Africa. He came in as a guest. He didn't fight his way into this country. The Native American welcome. And then he built the fort, the first colony was Fort Roanoke. It wasn't Fort Jamestown. That's what they called it. Mm-hmm. You understand? And they built, and I mean, it's different when you're dealing with a European who has a mentality, I want to rule the world.
Yeah.
Whereas other people say, I just want to live in here.
Mm-hmm.
And like when John was talking about on the continent, brothers are happy just living their life. The way they do it, you know, with their custom and tradition. There are some that wants to capitalize and grow, but people are comfortable just, hey, look, you know, I'm comfortable, you know, we got food, we got family, we got community, that's all. And they live their lives out. But this country, everybody's in a rat race to try to get what the other person got. Mm. Or more. And it's a struggle. That's all I'm saying. But, you know, it's a struggle. I wouldn't have it any other way. You understand? As far as I'm concerned, we got the white guy surrounded. Mm. It's just a matter of time before we close the net.
That's right.
And strangling, because he's a minority on the planet.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I wanted to add to something what Joe was talking about. And I've been talking about this to my students and other people, and I've mentioned it on here before. When the pandemic hit, they said that when they shut down the world, or, you know, parts of the world, and here in Los Angeles, they and other parts in the nation, they said that you're only allowed to do essential things. Non-essential things, no. So my question is, and to that thought is, why are we living a life of being non-essential? We should be doing essential things, period. Nothing non-essential. So that comes with the mentality. They give us and they allow us to do all of these things that are counterproductive. We need to get out of mentality of being counterproductive.
Mm-hmm.
And like me, I had to admit all of mine. And I started doing things very different than what I was. You know, when they say people seek enjoyment, so they got to go get drugged out. They got to go get drinked out, smoked out to enjoy themselves. That is non-essential and it doesn't make sense. So the mentality has to change. This is how we're going to be able to build counter financial institutions and things of that nature. So when Joe was talking, I just had to bring that up, you know, because he kind of reminded me of that. And so we have to get in that mentality, the mind change. you know, because it's a lot of brain control or mind control going on. And this is why these people do the things that they do. All right.
One of the things I want to comment on is on the currencies, the digital currencies. The Africans are already on this digital currency thing. You know, I got a couple of brothers that are from the Congo who live here in the United States, and they are way ahead of us on that digital currency. And in Nigeria, the brother that I was telling you about, Reggie Middleton, who has his own coin, he has his own platform. He's already doing business over there in Nigeria. You know, so we things keep moving forward. Like Ross said, we in a battle. The war ain't over. Mm-hmm. You know, we got caught, you know, blindsided, but yeah, we fighting back now. So the brothers in Africa, they didn't hooked onto this digital currency, and the most creative minds in the world are Black people. All the creativity that's on the planet today came out of the Black mind. And so when the Black mind, like I say, the brothers over in Cameroon and in Nigeria, these brothers are brilliant. I mean, we're gonna see some extraordinary things coming out of Africa in the next 5-10 years.
Good.
But I wanted to comment on the other thing that Joe was talking about, and you mentioned also, Rob, was the religion piece. Because that is where we really got caught into, especially in the Christianity thing with a white Jesus, and then made him historical. You know, and then made him the son of God, then, and we following that guy, ain't no way in the world we could be saved. You know, and then jumping up in church and going through all that craziness, that is another thing that we have to deal with in our community. You have to come out of the religious thing and think like a human and not like a religious practitioner.
It's going to be hard.
Amen.
Yeah, I know it's going to be hard, but you know what? It will happen.
Well, you know, most people on the planet are not religious.
Mm-hmm.
On the planet. And, you know, the European separated church from state because of his contradictions. You know, I mean, you know, and it's hypocrisy. Mm-hmm. He is talking about abortion, and he believes in the death penalty. So he believes in pro life, but he believes in the death penalty, mm-hmm. And he believes in war. And financing wars and giving guns to people and believing gun rights and then talking about he's pro-life.
Mm-hmm.
Take more fentanyl than anybody and he's pro-life. You know, and he makes fentanyl. Talk to people how to make it and act like it's being imported.
Mm-hmm.
This guy, anyway, y'all know all that. And the point is that it's a culture crisis, as John was saying, a crisis of views and values. As Dr. Kering argued in the 60s, the key crisis in Black life is a culture crisis. Mm-hmm. And we have to develop a culture that keeps us from trying to be American and find joy within ourselves. I ain't saying you shouldn't work and make money, but once you leave that job, be African.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know? I mean, you see all these athletes on the side, $10,000 seats at ball games and suites with chains looking like they Zales jewelers. And, you know, I mean, it don't make no sense.
No.
You know, when they could be doing other things other than flashing things, this nature. But, you know, it's a struggle. You know, it's a struggle. You know, I mean, and I believe what John said, that the people gonna rise up. And the first thing they're gonna do is get rid of the hypocrites within the struggle and those that's holding us back by converting us for the white man into Americanism.
You know, Rod, I just wanted to mention this thing is that this country has no morality. And when you don't have a morality, you go for anything. You know, there's nothing out there that this country can hold its hat on to say, this is our moral standard, our moral fiber. There is no morality in this country. There's no morality in the church. You know, so the people out there, they just drifting from church to church or from lane to lane with no direction.
Well,
if you have a country that has a moral center, not a religious center, but a moral center, you know.
Well, the three major Western religions, as Dr. Ben say, they all hold the major lie that there's life after death. And if you give me your money and praise me, you'll live forever and see your mama and daddy in heaven.
Yeah.
But then they put you in the ground and you're going the wrong way. Mm-hmm. That's where hell's supposed to be.
Yeah.
I don't know, brother. You know, hey, that it is. But it's a beautiful discussion. Yeah, John, you're always welcome to chime in on any discussions we have and just to be a part of our network. If you have any interesting information you want to share, just call us or just chime in and share it with us. This will be on YouTube. When we close off, you need to stay on and talk to Rasha Key. You need a picture of you so he can put it up and show it on our network as well as put it on YouTube. And any of your friends want to hear your lecture, you can tell them you're on YouTube and things of that nature. So your discussion rather than that. So Roski, you want to close us out?
Yeah. Yeah, well, I'm not going to be on Wednesday. We're not having a show on Wednesday. And then we'll be back on next Wednesday, and I'll show what we got on.
Well, we're going to have a community forum next Monday, and we're going to be discussing LA 92. We're going to be discussing abortion. We're going to be discussing where Black people should be on the abortion issue. LA 92, which we just celebrated from April 29th to May 4th. Uh-oh. Am I gone?
You still here.
Okay, yeah, April 92. Then we're going to be discussing the reparations in Oklahoma, where 107-year-old Viola Fletcher and another person, 107, and another person, 101, just got the right to sue for reparations for Tulsa. We got to recognize those things. So, hopefully everybody will come back and we'll have those discussions. All right.
Right. Hey, so on the 18th, we got Brother Thomas, one of our team members on the website. He's coming back on. I think this may be about his fourth or fifth visit. And he's going to talk about Black male and female relationships, being on the code with the dress code. And we had a conversation about that. And he brought some very interesting points on that. And we have to discuss that because, you know, we have to know where we are and we have to know who we're dealing with. And a lot of our young people and a lot of our older people think that dressing provocative is okay. And I disagree with that. I don't think we should exploit our bodies. But we're going to discuss that. So that should be very interesting. And hopefully, you know, Brother John can join us in all of these discussions when he have time. Okay. So you ready to close out, Rod?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. So,
John, you know you're welcome anytime. Mm-hmm. And you and Joe are always on. Tommy is always ranking. Well, even though I'm in the past.
All right, Rod.
Each One Teach One in Conscious Corner. Everybody have a good evening.
All right. Don't forget to get this picture.